This podcast was specifically created for Distress and Crisis Ontario organizations and their volunteer responders to provide training and educational assistance on a variety of topics. As information evolves and changes, these podcasts are meant to offer ongoing support with the goal of updating them on an ongoing basis. We thank the volunteer responders and the contributors to this podcast. Please visit our website, dcontario.org, for more information and how to access free mental health services. Thank you.
Today we welcome Dr. Anne Marie Zadlik.
The focus now is Facebook posts that keep people positive and give them good information, and fundraising for local efforts here. I'm raising funds for the Guelph Community Foundation, mm-hmm. and they're distributing those funds to different charities who are really struggling. We have to totally pivot in terms of how we raise funds because we can't hold events, and then raising funds for the programs in Lesotho.
So we can totally talk about the fundraising.
We can talk. If you want to ask the questions about the clinic, I meet twice a week with all the physicians in Guelph, a Zoom call, so I know what's happening with the clinic. I just don't work there very much.
Okay, so would you be able to tell the listeners like a bit about what the clinics were like when you were working there, or your experience with the COVID-19 virus then?
In general, so the COVID clinic was created by the executive director of the family health team, Ross Kirkconnell, who literally jumped way out of his job description. And decided to run way out front of where other municipalities were by gathering partnerships in Guelph between mm-hmm. public health, the hospital, and the Guelph Family Health Team, which is where most of the doctors work. So we're mostly umbrellaed under the Guelph Family Health Team. So what they've managed to do is create an incredible space that's huge. It's at the Victoria Rozek Center. Can hold 18 physicians and nurse practitioners at a time, maybe more than that, in cubicles, and people are ushered through one at a time, 6 feet apart, extremely safe. You won't get COVID at that clinic. And swabs them, essentially. What's great about the clinic now is we're going to head into cold and flu season much more quickly than we realize. It'll mm-hmm. be upon us in 4 or 5 months. We don't expect COVID to have gone too far away from us. As a matter of fact, it's going to be with us for a while. And so how do we manage a cold season, a flu season mixed in with COVID, and keep COVID out of our offices? Mm-hmm. And so the answer to that has been to pivot even more and create a respiratory clinic amongst the COVID clinics, so that if you go there with a cold or a flu or a sore throat or a fever, you'll call your family doctor, who will redirect you to the COVID clinic where physicians can now treat and prescribe. So I'm proud of the place because it always seems to be one step ahead of where we need to be.
I see. So it'll be coming into the next few months, there'll be kind of two different clinics, one for COVID and one for the regular cold and flu that we would normally, be passing around.
So it's all housed in the same place, and yep. the prescribers are sitting in the same place. But if you come in, mm-hmm. and a lot of people are coming in because their employers are asking them to, and a lot of people are coming in now because they have to have a negative COVID test before they can see relatives in long-term care. So there's 300 or 400 people moving through that clinic every day. When I was working there in April and May, there might have been 40 or 50. So it's really had to ramp up its capacity. if you have a cold when you go there right now, or even allergy symptoms that you're not sure about, the doctor will do a swab for COVID, but he will also be able to ask you questions about your symptoms and prescribe your antihistamine or antibiotics or puffers for people who have a trigger of their asthma. Yeah, so it's a diversion clinic that allows people to stay away from offices so that mm-hmm. COVID is not spread in doctor's offices.
Right, perfect. Mm-hmm. Just going back to what you said about how COVID will be with us for a while going into the next few months, we are noticing that when places start reopening, there are a lot of precautions, to say the least, like the shields or having to wear face masks wherever you go, social distancing. So would it be fair to call this like the new normal in your eyes? Is this something that we, you know, will have to get used to for at least the next little while?
I think we'll have to get used to it for at least a year. Okay. Recently, there's some research that came out, which was in the CDC today, on the CDC, that talked about research coming out of China that shows that people who tested positive but were asymptomatic did not have antibodies that lasted very long, which means we probably aren't given immunity by having the virus just for a short period of time. So that means we can't wait for herd immunity, because people lose their immunity fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just like the flu. You lose your immunity to the flu if you've had it in October of 1 year. The next year, you've lost your immunity to it, and so you could get it again, which is why we get a flu shot every year.
Mm-hmm.
So the COVID-19 vaccine has to be something that we give every year, or maybe more frequently than that. And the huge capacity that has to be in place to be able to do that, not only to make the vaccine, and we're very close to that. It's been incredible, the progress that's been made by three organizations in particular. We're close, but now they have to mass produce it and get it out to 8 billion people. And what I'm proud of is that this time with this pandemic, which didn't occur with HIV, there is an early focus on making sure the vaccine just doesn't get to rich countries, but mm-hmm. gets to poor countries as well.
Mm-hmm. So are you drawing connections between your experiences working with HIV and with COVID? Like, not that they're the same kind of disease or illness, but that they have like similar needs or progressions and that kind of thing?
In the first couple of months of the pandemic, it felt very much like the first years of HIV.
Mm-hmm.
But it's shifted now because it's something that affects all of us. And we're all at high risk of getting COVID-19. And so we've had to shift our lives, and we're living it differently than we were before. So it seems to be much more widespread, global, massive, and affecting us at every level, including our culture. We've mm-hmm. had to change how we greet one another. We've had to change how we socialize. It's very, very different. Mm-hmm. And so in that way, it's different than HIV.
That makes me think about when this whole pandemic first started, the number one thing that was scaring people most was that it was novel and it was never seen before. It was the novel coronavirus. Do you think that fear has faded in the medical community? Are doctors still as, you know, like afraid of the novel coronavirus, or are we feeling more confident about how we're treating it?
I think the scientific community and the medical community is just as vigilant before, just as vigilant now as we were at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're just as afraid of what this virus can do, but with much more hope because a vaccine is an excellent probability that we'll have a vaccine. But also, we've learned that certain measures keep it under control, and Canada is in an excellent position right now because our numbers are low. But we've built up the infrastructure we need to test, treat, and contact trace. And we'll have little outbreaks that continue, especially as we open up the economy. But they'll be managed so quickly that they won't spread and won't become a surge, which is what we're seeing in the States right now. Mm-hmm. So it's very possible that we will not see a surge, that we're now at status quo. Mm-hmm. And what we'll see is little outbreaks that are well managed and contained.
So you don't think there's a possibility for like a large second wave type of situation?
Well, there's definitely the possibility, but it doesn't have to happen.
Okay.
So if people continue to take this virus very seriously, and they should, I don't think the planet's ever seen anything like this. It's a tricky virus for many reasons, and it's very hard to tackle it because of how it infects and the fact that now we know it probably doesn't confer any long-term immunity.
Mm-hmm.
People will need to take it seriously and not become complacent. And if we don't become complacent and we continue to keep a six feet distance, wash our hands, wear a mask in public, and I think they should be worn everywhere in public.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more and more evidence to say that if there isn't immunity built towards this thing, then we really have to put masks on. We do not have to go to a surge. Definitely, we do not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm hoping for the most part that people are listening and adhering and understanding that this isn't a drill, so to speak. Mm-hmm. This is a big deal. And we have to follow our leaders who've been incredible in terms of their collaboration and their reliance on medical experts. But we also have to work together cohesively and do it all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And we will see a surge if we are fractured in our approach or if some people break off from the social distancing rules, which is what happened in the States, right?
Yeah.
No coordinated effort. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's also, I've seen a common argument that a lot of people are against wearing masks. What do you have to say to that?
I think that we need 60 to 70% of people wearing a mask. Not everyone has to. And there are various reasons why people don't want to wear a mask. Certainly if a mask makes you short of breath or you have an underlying lung condition and it's not advised that you wear a mask, or you're a child who's going to touch the mask too much, or you're under two, those are all reasons not to wear a mask. I think people who are really opposed to it probably shouldn't wear a mask either. And my hope is that the majority of us will wear that mask, not to offend people who are upset about masks, but to actually protect them.
Mm-hmm. That's perfect. I also just wanted to ask you before we wrap up this conversation, I know that you've been active on your social media platforms, as you said in the beginning of the conversation, about raising hope and providing resources and positive energy on your social media. What made you want to start that, and what kind of inspired you to take that action during these times?
I wasn't inspired to do it. I was asked to do it. I had posted, I think my first post was March 11th, maybe March 13th. It was after the pandemic was called.
Mm-hmm.
And a group of physicians who were just about to discuss how to get the community ready were meeting in my parking lot in like March, and it was a beautiful blue sky day but freezing cold, and we were all standing 6 feet apart. So I asked someone to take a picture and posted that, and Krista Renner, who put together the care mongering group in Guelph, noticed that post was actually getting a lot of traction, and she called me about a week later and said, do you think you can keep posting? So every day since I've been posting, and I keep being encouraged to do that, but it's challenging at times because I'm also very busy. Our offices are packed and we're dealing so much now with the echo pandemic, which is mental illness that's increasing everywhere.
Right. I don't think I have any more questions for you. That was a great conversation.
Yes, it was. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Zadlik. That wraps up all of my questions. So I wanted to say thank you on behalf of myself and the entire DCO team and our listeners for taking the time to speak with us today. We hope you stay safe, and we hope to speak with you again soon.
Hi, I'm Damien,
one of the editors of the DCO Learning Forms podcast. Over the past year, we've been busy converting our Learning Forms series of videos into podcasts and thinking of new ways to continue delivering new and more in-depth content. We've seen the demand, and we're announcing our move to Pinecast and our new tip jar function. Please consider going to tips.pinecast.com/jar/distressandcrisisontario and donating. And in return, we'll be recording new follow-up episodes on some of our most popular topics. These will be accessible for tippers only and will help pay for travel, web hosting, etc. For the interim, you'll still be able to access existing content on both the Pinecast and Fireside feeds for free, but eventually we'll be making the switch to Pinecast. Thank you for your understanding.